This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Adaptive Computing, providers of MOAB, the intelligent automation software that manages more of the most complex and advanced facilities in the top 500 than any other technology. www.adaptivecomputing.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
DoD cuts off supercomputing center.
And the gathering storm, well, it's gathered.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for December 10th, 2010, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. Good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. Michael, we're talking about in the Arctic Supercomputer Center. We're in California. It's not cold here, but things just got a little colder in Alaska, right?
Yeah, this story kind of found out about last week, sort of with an anonymous email, or semi-anonymous, that they're having a little bit of a surprise, not so much of a surprise up there at the Arctic Region Supercomputing Center. The DoD, which supports the majority of that center, looks like it's going to cut off its funding at the end of May of next year, putting maybe up to 50 employees in jeopardy and definitely shrinking the scope of what's being done up there.
Now, this is one of six major Department of Defense, major shared resource centers, or MSRCs, right?
Right.
Some that are assigned to specific branches of the military, like Army Research Labs, and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base has one. But now this one is not tied to a particular branch of the military, but nevertheless has been doing a lot of DoD work for how long now? Almost 20 years.
Right. The center was inaugurated in 1993, and it's been getting funding from the DoD to the tune of like basically 95% of the funding for that center comes from the DoD. And this is under the High Performance Computing Modernization Program, which all the centers are under, basically. And right, it's one of the six centers, and they're spread out. And this one is, you know, is sort of out there. There's one in Hawaii as well, but the others are in the continental U.S. and Mississippi and Maryland and a few other places.
But, right. Now, if I'm not wrong, the Arctic one and the Maui one were added later than the original four, and now we're coming back. We're getting rid of one of those and coming back to five.
Right. As far as we know, five. I mean, one of the interesting things about this story is that I don't think the DoD necessarily wanted this to be public at this time. I mean, it's 6 months away. I think they would rather just sort of quietly retire this. But the folks up in Alaska wanted to sort of make this public, at least to the people that were in danger of losing their jobs. So the chancellor of the University of Alaska that the center is associated with basically called a meeting and said, you know, this is what's going on and this is what we're looking at. So everybody get prepared. And there's a plan up there to sort of figure out what to do. Now, it doesn't look like the center itself will go away. I think the University of Alaska is going to pick up, you know, the running of that center, and maybe they already had to a certain extent. I'm not sure how much of the DoD money went actually into the operational expense, but certainly the computers that were DoD funded and basically the labor, the people that were involved in those are all in jeopardy now because it was a lot of money. We're talking, you know, at least $12 million a year, maybe up to $15 million a year, and most of that's going away now.
Well, I mean, this is kind of a blow for, you know, Alaska in a way. I mean, it's going to sound like a joke to say it, but has Sarah Palin commented? I mean, this is kind of her area, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the forgotten state up there. But, you know, the good story out of this is I think they sort of knew up in Alaska, the University of Alaska knew that this was maybe in the works, and I'm not sure quite how, but this was being telegraphed to them before this happened. And it basically happened through an email just before Thanksgiving. The DoD said, you know, this contract's not gonna be extended. But they sort of had an idea that this was going to happen, and they actually were working the past couple of years to move the academic research from being used by the University of Alaska researchers onto non-DoD equipment, and they just purchased, not just, but recently purchased a relatively new system using mostly Penguin servers and Penguin gear, and they've moved all of that work now onto that system. So they're actually, the researchers up there at least are in pretty good shape, and they'll probably keep the center as is. It's just the workers are in jeopardy, and they're not sure how they're going to fold those into the academic side of it.
One thing I was trying to get a sense of is whether this is a spending cut from a DOD allocation standpoint, or spending reallocation, and the other MSRCs are going to get more. Because it's interesting politically if what you see is the U.S. spending less on supercomputing right at the same time that we see this big run-up by China to, you know, the number one and number three systems, and we've all been predicting, is there going to be a political response? If the first public thing that happens after that is we're going to take one of the DOD centers offline, it kind of looks like it's heading in the opposite direction.
Yeah, it does. And I wasn't able to get a response from the folks at the High Performance Computing Modernization Program, from Cray Henry, who runs that program.
Did talk to Frank Williams.
Yeah, the director. I talked to Frank at the Arctic Region Supercomputing Center. He's the director there, but he wasn't really willing to comment as far as the motivations of the Department of Defense. I got the general impression that it was, you know, those budgetary constraints. They're looking to do with less funds, and they had to make some choices, and they decided, well, you know, like you said, we've got the four major branch centers. They want to keep those centers, and this right. And I mean, for all we know, the DOD might be cutting more money out of other centers. Maybe I don't want to speculate right here, but we don't know about any of that now. Nothing's public, but yeah, there are, I think, budgetary constraints going on, and they had to make some choices. And it's not to fault them, but there was some important work, and it's not like they had like tons of centers. They only had six, and there was some important work they were doing up there. Now, the most modern DOD computer that was up at the Arctic Region Center was a new Baker-class Cray system. And that actually
They've got a brand new Cray XE6 up there. I mean, they just bought it.
Right, they just bought it. But actually, that got relocated to Vicksburg, and they're running it as a remote machine. And maybe that was part of it. They figured, well, since they can run it remotely, they don't really need that center anymore. But I'm not sure what the idea was. But that machine actually is in Mississippi now, and it's about to it's under acceptance testing, but I think it's about to be accepted. And once that happens, they're going to decommission their older Cray machine up in Fairbanks, and then they won't have any modern DOD machines anymore. So it looks like it's segueing out of there, and I think by the middle of next year, they'll just be an academic center.
Well, Michael, in our supercomputing wrap-up podcast where we do winners and losers, you and I both declared the U.S. as the loser from the show, and we were looking forward to what breakthroughs could start bringing us in the other direction. You know, this is kind of continuing the path of bad news for U.S. supercomputer sites.
Yeah, it sort of is. I mean, it's not a huge story. That was a relatively small center, but, you know, to sort of
It's one of six DOD major shared resource centers, and it's coming offline. It doesn't look great.
It doesn't look great, right? I mean, it's you know, as supercomputing centers go, it's relatively small. But certainly, if you want to sort of spread decentralize HPC in your footprint, right, your infrastructure, it's not a positive thing going on here.
Well, we'll take a quick break for a sponsor, and then when we come back, we'll talk about a related story revisiting the Gathering Storm report from 5 years ago.
Adaptive Computing's Moab Intelligent Automation products manage more of the world's most complex and advanced facilities in the top 500 than any other technology. 24% of the systems and 39% of the compute cores of the top 100 systems on the June 2010 Top 500 list. To find out what's new in Moab 6.0 for large-scale facilities and grids, hybrid GPGPU-based systems, HPC as a service, and HPC cloud. For more information on Adaptive Computing's Moab family, visit www.adaptivecomputing.com.
So, Michael, you wrote a blog this week that looked at a recent report that came back and was titled "The Rising Above the Gathering Storm Revisited." This comes back and looks at an original 2005 report 5 years later that was entitled "The Gathering Storm." And the point of that original report was that it said the U.S. is falling behind in science and technology, with the main point that innovation was being stifled in the United States relative to other countries, and spelled out recommendations that $19 billion a year needed to be invested in order to restore the country's K through 12 education system for science and math, double the federal budget for basic research in math, science, and engineering, and get more students into science and tech careers. And now we've got a new report that's coming out looking at how we've done in the last 5 years.
Right. And like you said, it's 5 years later. And, you know, it's not all terrible news, but basically, in a nutshell, these guys are saying, well, we're still going in the wrong direction, maybe not as fast as we were, but it's still very dire. I mean, some of that original report did lead to some sort of significant legislation. And 2 years after the report was published, the Bush administration put forward the Competes Act, the America Competes Act, to get U.S. competitiveness, to stimulate U.S. competitiveness in science and technology and research and development and education in this area. And that was passed. I mean, it was bipartisan. There was strong support on both sides of the aisle. You know, the Bush administration was behind. It was basically their baby from the beginning, and it was passed. The problem was it was never really fully funded. I mean, the bill said basically we need to do all these things, but when the appropriations time came around, and this is typically what happens in a lot of bills, there wasn't the money. There wasn't the support to put all that money into it. So it was only partially funded. A lot of the recommendations from the report weren't funded at all. And in fact, if you go into the revisited report, which is online under the National Academy Sciences site, they spell out, you know, what was funded and what wasn't and what happened. But the basic
What happened is that they say the U.S. is currently ranked 48th in quality of mathematics and science education. 47 other countries doing better in math and science education than the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, there was a whole series of sort of bad news around, you know, these little nuggets of bad news. I mean, I think, yeah, you mentioned one of them. I mean, one of them was, you know, right, they're 48th in science and math. They're 27th among all the developed nations in the number of college students getting degrees in science and engineering. I mean, 27th, that's pretty far down. I'm trying to think of the other 26 countries that are beating us out. and when this report was written, one of the things they listed was, you know, a supercomputer produced in China was ranked the world's second fastest. Well, since then, you know what we have. We have the computer in China is now the fastest. So it's gotten worse just in a few months of when this report was published.
Right. And it's a different computer than the one that used to be second fastest. The one that was second fastest is now third, and there's a new supercomputer that's first.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Right. And so the basic conclusion of this new study is that we're still going in the wrong direction. And probably the worst news is the other countries, particularly China, are coming up faster. Like in the past 5 years especially, we've seen China and India and to a lesser extent some other countries develop very quickly in the science and technology arena. And I think we've
also
seen
Russia.
And Russia. I mean, Brazil. We're seeing a lot of countries, but yeah, there's a lot of development. I mean, some very fast-moving economies.
Well, I said Russia. You said Brazil. That's all of the BRIC companies right there getting mentioned all in a row.
There you go. But they're not the only ones. I mean, there's some European countries that are investing more. Even Japan is sort of reinvesting after sort of a year or two of doldrums there. So this is sort of a challenge to the U.S. to see what we're going to do. Now, in the blog, I talk about, you know, there's all these political considerations going on. I mean, the other thing that happened during the intervening 5 years is the recession, and that sort of distracted a lot of the political will from sort of following through, especially on the appropriations side. And now it's sort of hard for me to conceive of politicians in this country getting really energized about this topic. It's just everybody's sort of looking short term to get the country back on track with jobs and the after effects of the recession. And this is a long-term strategy that these guys from the National Academy of Sciences are putting forth. And it's just hard for me to conceive of how, you know, sort of the political climate is going to change in the near term to sort of address this.
Well, I think the long and short of it is, if we've got American listeners out there and you've got kids, get them doing their math and science homework.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get them some engineering degree. But then I mentioned kind of glibly at the top of the podcast when we were getting ready to set up the Alaska story that you and I are in California. It's probably worse here than it is in the rest of the country. You know, California schools are in horrible shape. We're in a major budget crisis. And, you know, one of the possibilities for a year from now is that our state school system goes into federal receivership because we can't educate our children in California. So it's pretty bad here.
It is bad here, and it's amazing because a lot of the innovation R&D in this area comes from California. But yeah, you know, then at the bottom, at the foundation of that is sort of crumbling. And California is not the only state. All the really big states are in bad trouble right now because they've had huge budgets and the commensurate. Right. Fall-offs.
There are a lot of states in trouble, and we never mean for this to be a local news podcast, but California is very germane to this conversation. It's the hub of Silicon Valley is here. All this technology is supposed to be coming out of California, and meanwhile, our state, our schools are I think 49th in the country, the last I saw, or I might be wrong, it might be 48th, but it's pretty bad, and we're in a major budget crisis looking at more huge cuts to the school spending for the next school year.
Right. Well, you know, that reminds me, one of the things they brought out in that report was some of the deterioration of sort of the U.S. innovation machine has been forestalled by actually importing technologists from other countries. I mean, we see certainly in our industry, HPC, there's just a lot of foreign-born, you know, CEOs, CTOs, and just companies that have come in and sort of energized the space, and even on the education side as well. So the fact that we're able to immigrate talent has sort of slowed down sort of the deterioration. If we had to rely on our own education system, just our own native citizenry to fund this, it would have been much more rapid, the deterioration. So at least that's working for us. And one of the recommendations of the NAS report is to actually make immigration even more liberal and allowing more people from other countries to come in and work in these science and technology areas.
Well, we're going to take one more break from a sponsor, and then we'll come back and wrap up with a quote of the week from a U.S. supercomputing lab director with a quote that's relevant to the conversations we've been having today.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Adaptive Computing, providers of MOAB, the intelligent automation software that manages more of the most complex and advanced facilities in the top 500 than any other technology. www.adaptivecomputing.com.
Well, Addison, you have a quote of the week for us. Now, from what we talked about, this is from your SC10 analyst crossfire panel that you did at the recent supercomputing show, and you talked to some industry movers and shakers, and you have a quote from that. Why don't you let us know what it is?
Yeah, I really enjoyed doing this panel, and the video from it is on the SC10 New Orleans YouTube channel, or you can get the link off of my Twitter feed. But I had some expert panelists reacting to topics I was introducing from the show. One of my panelists was Thomas Sterling, who runs the supercomputing lab at LSU. And in talking about China's role in the worldwide supercomputer market, he said, unlike us, they have a long tradition of five-year plans, and they stay the course. And he went on to say, the U.S. is in deep crisis right now in terms of its federal strategy and HPC technology research. The Democrats don't understand technology, and the Republicans don't fund it unless it's funding defense research. So first of all, with regards to the 5-year plans. He's talking about China at the start, early in a 5-year plan and them sticking with it. And I kind of thought that was relevant to this gathering storm where we're looking back 5 years ago and say, what have we done in the last 5 years? And then he's talking about, whether or not we're funding high performance computing research and it's only for defense. And yet we're taking the DOD center, we're reducing the investment there. So I thought those were both two very relevant quotes.
Yeah, that's a sobering comment, certainly, and certainly from Thomas Sterling, who's been in this community for decades, and certainly has perspective to make a statement like that. So, yeah, I think it's not the imagination of just people writing these reports. It's really going on, and it is something we have to sort of address at some level.
Sure. Well, I mean, Thomas has skin in the game, too. He'd like to get more funding. It's not like he doesn't have any interest in this. But nevertheless, his is an expert opinion.
It is. And I know, we've talked about it. You said, the U.S. has to have response to the China number one system on the top 500. And I've expressed my doubts whether anything will happen. I mean, we'll look ahead and see what happens next year. But I can't say that I'm pessimistic, but I'm not optimistic either about what's going to happen in sort of this political and economic climate right now. It doesn't seem like the right time for politicians or bureaucrats to sort of focus on this particular subject right now. But, we'll see. I mean, Obama earlier this week did give a big speech about, innovation and competitiveness in the U.S., and he says, they're committed to upping the federal R&D budget from 2% to 3% by next year. But again, where's that money coming from? How's he going to get that through Congress? How's this all going to happen? It's just not a front burner issue for anybody right now. And our little corner of the world it is, but how do you capture the public imagination on something like this?
Well, it's kind of a bit of a series of downer stories on our podcast this week, Michael. We'll see if we're feeling a little better next week as we do our last podcast of the year, and we'll recap some of our favorite stories from 2010.
That sounds perfect. Until then, Gaddison, have a happy week, and we'll be seeing you next week.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Talk to you later.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.